Dave Fanning on 2FM.
Now, last weekend, video game publishing giant Rockstar Games was the victim of an unprecedented content leak. According to the company, 90 videos of in-development Grand Theft Auto 6 gameplay were published online after a hacker illegally accessed and downloaded confidential information from Rockstar systems. These videos featured major details of the unreleased game, including the setting, the existence of male and female protagonists, and some integral narrative elements as well. So to sum, these details may seem insignificant, but there are major aspects of the game, and one of basically they add massively to the gaming experience. Really important stuff. The narrative or the story of a video game, hugely important for many reasons. And joining me now to explain why is Irish novelist and video game reviewer for The Guardian. That's Sarah Maria Griffin. Sarah, are you all right? How are you doing on this Saturday afternoon?
Holding well, Dave. It's great to be here having a chat.
Holding well. Good. Well, listen, those might not be aware of what happened last weekend. And I have to say, I'm not 100% sure of what this is all about necessarily, because I don't necessarily see, is it really that bad? Tell me about the details.
So what happened was, actually, there was a major update to the case yesterday. Ooh. A 17-year-old hacker was arrested in connection with this crime. So, yes, you're right, 90 videos and plenty of imagery was leaked, stolen and leaked from Rockstar Studios and has been distributed all across the internet. The game is long in development. The last Grand Theft Auto game, which I think has earned out a sum of $6 billion, which is an incredible amount of money for any property to have achieved. It's a huge, huge piece of work. That game was released in 2013. So we're a really, really long way off of its original release. So the audience and the fandom have been waiting for a very long time for this new game to come out. So there's a huge amount of hype and a huge amount of anticipation. But if you look at unfinished work, you're never going to see what it's truly, you know, what the final product is going to look like. So it's also a huge shame for the developers and the writers and the illustrators and musicians who are working so hard to have their work shown at such an early point in development.
Well, then, what story in general? First of all, I presume there's been five before this one. Have there been? Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, Grand Theft Auto has been around for a long time.
I know. Yeah,
time.
even I know that. I just wouldn't have known there were five because I don't know much about it necessarily. So this is number six. So what story does overall Grand Theft Auto tell?
The Grand Theft Auto 5 is set in a fictional, I guess, span of California called San Andreas, and it looks at the lives of three criminals which overlap and overturn as they play out various crimes and missions across this huge expanse of land. Part of the power of the story of Grand Theft Auto is that there are innumerable stories, and it's what the player brings to the world. Grand Theft Auto allows you a great deal of freedom to move around the world, committing crimes, stealing cars, etc. But I think what makes it so powerful to people is that people can bring their own adventure to the world that is built for them.
So in other words, like, the narrative is so important because of the magic of the whole thing, is it?
I think the way that it works is that there's not just one story. There's infinite stories, almost. When you log on and you begin to play a game of Grand Theft Auto, you get in the car or you step into the city streets and the world is open before you. It's like stepping into another life. There is a story. There are several, you know, to start you off and to get you going. But there's also a huge amount of freedom. And that, I think, is why it's so popular, that you can sort of step into this whole other world and make choices and go on adventures and do whatever you want. Things that you probably couldn't necessarily do in your real life. It's all about escapism rather than necessarily having a story told to you.
Well, and what about the history? I mean, have video games always been built around a story arc, or is this a pretty relatively new aspect of the industry?
So Pong is the first video game that entered people's households back in 1972, which I think most people, if they search through their mind's eye, can imagine what Pong looks like. It's two lines playing a very simple game of tennis to each other, a game of ping pong.
Can I just say, in the Belfield Bar in University College Dublin, I was the champion. I was brilliant at that. And then I never did any more after that.
No mean feat. Pong is not an easy game.
No, because it used to go faster and faster all the time. And like, I saw it always as a goal. Not so much tennis, but like, it had to get through past me in a little goal behind me, you know. Anyway,
well,
sorry.
The screen is very abstract, so you can, there you go. You can bring your own adventure.
You see, that's what I did, obviously, without knowing that's what I did. Yeah.
So the story of Pong is simply you versus me. You know, it's not that complicated, and the player can bring their own anticipation and their own drama into that story. And over time, as the visual graphics and the things that we can do with video games developed, the stories developed alongside that. So initially, the stories were very, very simple. But over time, as things became more complicated and worlds became more rich on the other side of the screen, stories became equally as complicated as what we see when we play.
And how do video games compare to movies and books? I mean, how do they differ and how are they alike?
They're fundamentally different, because when we're sitting down reading a novel, or when we're sitting in the cinema looking up at the screen, we're passive. We're just reading, we're just watching. The only choice we have to make really is to turn the page or to walk into the cinema in the first place. But the second we're in it, we're in it. The real choice we have is whether to stay till the end or read till the end or not. However, with video games, you're making choices all the time. You're controlling a character. You're moving through a world, even if that world is as simple as Super Mario jumping over a hole and collecting coins, or if it's as complex and detailed and dramatic and tense as the world of San Andreas, you're still making choices. The controller and the control is still in your hands. So there's a much tighter connection between the audience and the piece of work or the piece of art than there is in any other medium. They're distinctly unique in that way.
And also, because movies are a passive form of screen entertainment, video games are all about you, the player.
So
tell me about something like Metal Gear Solid. I've never heard of it. So what is that?
Well, that's Metal Gear Solid is one of those, is a video game that I think for a lot of people who play is a place where gameplay and cinema meet. And there are plenty of other games where those two things land together as well, where a great deal of the work of the game that you play is you moving a controller through the world. But there's also long cutscenes, there's beautiful writing, there's incredible music. It's the Metal Gear Solid series, which began many, many years ago in the late 80s, and is still, I believe it's capped off now, but is a very big franchise that deals with war and soldiers. It's fairly heavy going stuff, but it plays out a lot of it like a film in front of you. You guide your character and you sneak around and you play through the story, but there are huge interludes of just watching as well. So there are lots of games that combine movement and I would stretch to say cinema as well.
Do you know, wasn't there some statistic about the fact that gaming makes more money than movies, sport and sort of music put together or something like that?
It does. As of 2021, games market, the whole games market altogether was worth $120 billion. And every year that keeps going up. There was a big jump during the pandemic. As you can imagine, a lot more people were stuck in their homes and were playing video games, many of them for the first time. So if you take into account people buying consoles, buying games, multiple games a year, potentially multiple games a month, or people playing games on their phone, which require microtransactions where you pay money to buy outfits or bonuses or special items, the whole industry is a hugely powerful economy in itself. So it has more directions of income than any other entertainment field combined.
Wow, that's just, I mean, it's 120 billion.
Yeah, it's huge and rising. You know?
Right, indeed. Okay, so listen, let's take a look. I mean, a story in a book, a story on the screen or whatever. Is there a snobbery towards video games as storytelling mediums? And if so, why do you think that is?
I do think there is, but I also do think that that is changing. All the time, games are coming out which are pushing the limits of what we think art is and what we think literature is. Books are an incredibly old medium of entertainment and education. They've been around for a very long time. You're going back to scroll, people have been writing things down for a very long time. Video games, as we know them in the home, like I said, Pong came out in 1972, making the home console only 50 years old. So what it's achieved in that really short period of time, there's no way that it can achieve the level of criticism or of it's growing all the time. It's turning into itself. It's not quite at a point yet where people are ready to accept it as an art, but I do think that it's getting there. So for example, the first moving image was produced around 1895, and then in 1941, Citizen Kane was on film screens. So if you think about, that's about 50 years.
Yeah.
So that's how long it took Pong to get all the way up to Grand Theft Auto. And it's also how long it took, you know, a man riding on a horse in black and white, this flicking image all the way up to Citizen Kane. So we're only now learning what video games are capable of and what kind of stories can be told and what kind of experiences people can have with that method of entertainment. It's changing all the time, and it's the most exciting space in entertainment that there is, I believe.
Changing all the time, but I get the impression it might be changing a bit slower than some people might think. I mean, people's perspectives, they're changing on video games, I presume. So are they starting to take them more seriously as an art form?
I do think they are. There's a great deal of really, I guess, like music and like cinema, a lot of the really interesting and clever and bold work is being made outside of the mainstream. So Rockstar Games is a AAA studio. Like Grand Theft Auto is a blockbuster, as is something like Call of Duty. Those are huge games with huge budgets and enormous teams working behind them. But I think where the real interesting stories and complicated art is being made is in smaller studios that are building more personal games, and little by little more and more of those are appearing in the world, and that's where I think the really interesting stuff's happening. The Irish video game scene, for example, is producing incredible work. There's Dreamfeel Studio and Spooky Doorway. I've made a great series called Darkside Detective. There's lots of really interesting special stuff happening out of smaller studios, and I think over time the more people that play those games, the bigger those studios will get and the more work they'll be able to put out. So I think the change, we're at a tipping point now, you know.
What about, tell me about Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow.
So Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow is a novel written by a writer called Gabrielle Zevin, which was released this year. And it's a beautiful story about two friends who in the early 90s start to work on a video game together. And it's the story of their lifetimes from when they meet as children up into their adulthoods, and they run a video game company together. And because it starts in the 90s and it's running all the way up to, I think, 2013 is how the story works, it shows a lot of the history of how video games work as well. And it's the first novel that I've read, I guess, since Ernest Cline's Ready Player One, that focuses entirely around video games. It's been a huge international success, an enormous splash, because the story manages to talk about video games, but also talk about what it means to play with other people. Like, that's what we do when we play video games. Yeah. The operative word there is play. In the way that we watch films, we read books, we play video games. And to play with other people is a huge act of vulnerability. So that's what that story is about. It's about people playing together and loving each other and making art and making creations together. And I think its success is a real mark of a wonderful point at which video games and the novel have met and made something really stunning.
Yeah, you know, but like, obviously, I mean, like, video games aren't just action, are they? I mean, like, there's a lot of other popular genres as well. Tell me about the other stuff.
I mean, I
suppose, like, totally devoid of narrative, the stuff that was hacked that we mentioned earlier on.
Certainly. I think at the beginning of the pandemic, a video game that was taking the world by absolute storm was Animal Crossing, which is, there's almost no story at all to Animal Crossing. It's a community building game where you arrive on a small island and you build a community with lovely neighbors, all of whom are animals. You decorate your house, you grow flowers. It's a very relaxing experience. Those sort of immersive, switch your brain off games, farming simulators like Stardew Valley, where you go and run a farm, those are hugely popular because people go to them with a sense of escapism. They just want to switch their brains off and go somewhere gentler and go somewhere easier. You could not get further from San Andreas than you are when you're on an island in Animal Crossing or in Stardew Valley. You know, those kind of experiences are hugely popular. A game that I played this year that I thought was really special is called Disco Elysium, which is an independent game that is written very densely, almost like a novel. And it's a mystery. It's a detective mystery, a deep noir. And I found that really stunning. The visuals are really, really artistic. There's a lot of watercolor painting in it. You are certainly leading a person through a world with a controller, but a lot of the gameplay comes from the puzzle solving and the unpacking of the mystery. There's a lot of really gorgeous mystery games. You name it, there is a game for it. This week I covered for The Guardian a game called Food Truck Simulator, where you run and manage a food truck. There are different games. There's a way to play at anything and everything at the moment. So no matter what you're interested in, you'll find a way to play at it.
Well, then when we talk about the influence and all the rest and just how big it all is, obviously you could look at the filthy moolah in terms of 120 billion for crying out loud. But at the other side of it is one way that people might judge it is if there's crossover. So are we starting to see video games influence movies and literature and TV?
Well, so Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow is a real landmark in terms of books, but in terms of television, The Witcher on Netflix is absolutely huge. In January next year, we have, I'm tentatively saying, the Super Mario Brothers movie. Now, in 1993, there was a Super Mario Brothers movie, which I think is something of a cult classic, but is very far away from the colourful world that most people who play video games would recognise, whereas the cartoon of Super Mario is coming at the beginning of next year. I do think that video games are starting to meet other mediums. They're starting to meet cinema, they're starting to meet television, but I also don't think that they need cinema or television. I don't think a hugely successful video game like Grand Theft Auto needs to be a movie. You know, I don't think it wants to be a movie. I think it needs to be a video game, and it wants to be a video game because that's where people will have the best experience of that world, rather in the cinema. I think that for a lot of art forms, like books and plays and things like that, becoming a film is the highest honor. Being translated to the screen is the best thing that can happen for you. And video games don't need that necessarily.
No, exactly. Absolutely. So like something like The Witcher, you didn't think that would necessarily be a successful video game and a TV series crossover. In other words, was it? Is it?
Yeah, people absolutely love it. And I think it's a really good example of a really successful translation that has a hugely devout audience. And hopefully that will lead to other games that do want to be translated into the translations they deserve, with great actors and great sets and everything like that. But there's not every video game that you play can merit that kind of translation either. Video games are sort of a cousin of those other games.
Yeah, right, indeed. Well, listen, thanks so much for talking with us and for educating me as well, Irish novelist and video game reviewer for The Guardian, Sarah Maria Griffin. Sarah, thanks a million for being with us on the programme today. Take it easy.
Dave Fanning on 2FM.